Hello, and thanks for listening to the Diana Gabaldon podcast. You can always find out more about me and my books at my website, www.dianagabaldon.com. Well, I thought I'd tell you a little bit about how books are actually made, because once a book is finished, that's only the beginning of the story. There's no more wonderful feeling than finishing a book, other than maybe giving birth to a child. There's, of course, a lot of similarity to these processes. The long gestation period, the feelings of hope and anticipation, mingled with feelings of profound horror and doubt as to exactly what one has taken on here. The major difference, though, is that once a baby is born, it's born. You know, any further improvements like growing hair or cutting teeth will have to be accomplished by the kid itself. But frankly, finished is a very relative term when you're talking about manuscripts. I mean, you may have typed the end, but believe me, that's just the beginning. Well, come to think of it, that still is something like having a baby. But from this point on, the manuscript keeps winging its way out into the world and coming back at unpredictable intervals like a boomerang with a snooze bar. From the comments of readers who send letters to the effect of, "I just read your new book. It was wonderful. When is the next one going to be out?" Usually they send me these starting about a week before the book is actually on the shelves from the advanced reader copies. But anyway, it appears that not many people realize, A, how long it takes to write a book. It takes me 2 or 3 years. Or B, just how much work goes into a book after the writer has written it. So this accounts for what seems to some readers to be unconscionable delay in getting a new book out. I have, for instance, told someone that, well, I've just finished a book last month, and they said, "Oh, good, when is the next one going to be out?" And I said, "Well, I've even begun writing that one next." And they stare at me in incomprehension and said, "Oh, but surely you have 2 or 3 of them written. Aren't you just, you know, sitting on them to drive the price up?" And I said, "What?" You get very strange letters from people. Anyway, I am a very slow writer. It takes me roughly 2 or 3 years to write one of the Outlander novels, but it's not all my fault. Anyway, here's a short description of just how many people other than the author are responsible for the appearance of a book. Once a manuscript's finished, it goes to the editor, who reads it. Now, all working relationships between writers and editors are unique, so exactly how the editor handles a book depends on style and preference. Some editors are very hands-on with some manuscripts. You know, they would write lots of comments, make changes in the text. Others are more subtle, or they deal with crankier authors, as the case may be. My own delightful editors have all been extremely subtle. Anyway, whatever the style, the editor makes his or her reaction to the manuscript known to the author. You know, they say, "I love this part," or, you know, "This part seems too long," or, "I've kind of lost the point here. Can you tighten it?" Along with specific suggestions for revision. Now, whether the writer takes any of these suggestions, thinks up different approaches, or rejects interference completely, then the writer proceeds to do whatever he or she feels necessary to revise. Now, this takes different amounts of time, depending on how much revision is needed. My books are usually almost the way I want them when they're finished, but it's impossible to judge a manuscript objectively when you've just finished writing it. I prefer to set them aside for a few weeks to kind of marinate in my subconscious, and then I can look at it with a cold eye and see where changes need to be made. Anyway, once the book has been revised, then it goes into production. This means the manuscript is assigned to a copy editor. Meanwhile, the art and marketing departments have likely already begun work on the packaging of the book. That means what the cover will look like, what the genre designation the book will be marketed under, if there's a question about that, what advertising forms and venue might be effective, and so on. The author has nothing to do with any of this. At this point, they're largely regarded as an irrelevant nuisance in the selling of the book. The copy editor's largely thankless job is to check the manuscript word by word for errors in spelling, grammar, and punctuation, errors of continuity. That means if someone's eyes are gray on page 32 and they're green on page 640, the copy editor should catch that and ask you which one you meant. Likewise, if people are drinking from teacups at the beginning of a scene, the maid comes in at the end to carry out the brandy glasses, the copy editor should notice this, and errors of fact. Now, this last one is somewhat tricky. People assume that publishers are all-knowing and copy editors are omniscient as well, and consequently, they will check every single historical fact in a book, and so if it's published in a book, it must be right. Well, actually, copy editors are very good at what they do, but they're not usually experts at history. And so they will ask you common questions like, were there really landmines in 1752? To which the answer is yes, there were. But they won't necessarily be able to check the verisimilitude of every single fact you used. Whenever a copy editor finds what appears to be a mistake or hits a questionable fact, he or she flags the item with a query written on a sticky note. When a copy edited manuscript comes in, it usually looks like a pile of pink or yellow confetti because of all the sticky notes sticking out of it. Typographical and grammatical errors will simply be corrected without comment, and then they do what's called house style for punctuation, meaning, you know, do you put two spaces after a period or one? Each publishing house has a list of standard usages that they prefer, you know, whether all numbers should be spelled out rather than given in numerical form, or that an honorific should be capitalized when accompanying a proper name but lowercase when used alone. Copy editing may take weeks or months, depending on the length of the manuscript. Once it comes back from the copy editor, the editor will usually look over the queries, then forward the manuscript to the author for correction. This is called answering the copy edit. This means that the author then reads the manuscript word for word, and if you write 500,000-word novels, it's going to take a while, noting all the changes made by the copy editor, making additional corrections if necessary, and answering all the queries. If an author disagrees with something a copy editor has done, the author writes stat on the manuscript. This comes, I'm told, from the Latin staltare, for let it stand. In other words, writing stat means, put this back the way I wrote it. A good copy editor is a gift from the gods and can save an author boundless embarrassment. A bad one? Let us preserve a discreet silence on that matter. After the trauma of the copy edit, there's usually a hiatus of weeks to months during which the author's services are not required. Out of sight, though, the minions of the production department are beavering away. The book designer is selecting a suitable typeface, deciding on the appropriate placement and style of page numbers, headers, footers, section markers, chapter heads, etc. The typesetter does the initial cast-off, which tells everyone exactly how many pages the book will be printed in the typeface chosen. In the case of my own books, this last step often comes as a nasty shock when they do the cast-off and realize the awful truth, which I have usually been concealing by the artful use of proportional type. Fortunately, it's usually too late at this point for them to insist that I remove a few hundred pages. Somewhere in this process, cover art emerges, often to the shock of the author. And in answer to the oft-asked question, no, authors do not normally choose their covers, and mail to the effect of, how could you let them do that to your book, causes authors to froth at the mouth. Let them, forsooth. Authors do sometimes have input into the process of cover design. I do now, thank you very much. And sometimes they have nothing whatever to say about it. Likewise, some cover artists, like the immensely talented and highly useful persons who have done the hardcover editions of my books, actually read the books before embarking on illustration. Most of them don't. In the fullness of time, which is usually not nearly full enough, another huge package arrives in the mail. This one contains the galley proofs of the manuscript. Galleys are the typeset, unbound pages of the book, and the final production stage, so far as the author is concerned, the last chance to catch mistakes or make changes. One is overtly discouraged from making many changes, given that at this stage making changes involves the typesetter and is quite expensive. After reading the galleys, word for word, again, and making any last-minute corrections or changes, the author's part in this endeavor is finally at an end. The galleys go back to the editor, who has another pass at them, and thence to the printer, where the insides of the books are produced. From the printer, these guts go to the bindery, where they're bound into real books. Meanwhile, the dust jackets, in the case of hardcover books, have been printed sometime before, and the flap copy added. Some authors write their own flap copy. I write my own flap copy. In some cases, either the editor or someone from marketing writes it, which accounts for a lot of the stuff you see on the back covers of books. I recommend that you open the book and try a few pages myself. Books are bound, jacketed, and packed into boxes for shipping, after which production is finished and we enter the realm of sales. Books are now the responsibility of the sales representatives, whose job it is to visit bookstores and talk up the virtues of the most recent releases in hopes that the bookstore buyer will feel disposed to place large orders. The whole process of production normally, as though there is such a thing as normal in this business, takes several months. The final product, a bound book, should ideally be ready 4 to 6 months before the proposed publication date. The reason for this is that the publisher, author, etc. would like the book to be reviewed in the popular press, and these magazines and newspapers usually require material several months in advance. So you're looking at anything from 6 months, which is known in the publishing trade as a crunch, and for good reason, to a year in order to take the book from a pile of sweat-stained pages to its final apotheosis on the bookstore shelves. As my husband says, finished is a relative term when you're talking about a book. Still, there eventually does come that glorious day when the book comes back again, this time as a book, all gleaming and solid, smelling of ink and paper, and the sheer intoxication of words in print. When my first book arrived in the mail, I promptly sat down and read it, to the astonishment of my family. But it wasn't a book when it left me, I explained. Now it is. And that's it for this installment of the Diana Gabaldon podcast. Thank you again for listening, and the paperback edition of my latest Outlander novel, A Breath of Snow and Ashes, is now on sale wherever books are sold. Do please be sure to visit my website at www.dianagabaldon.com.